Time for another episode of Brio TV, the podcast. I'm your host, Bill Brio. Hit it, boys. On this week's podcast, we'll be going back into the vault for a conversation I had in 1986, way back when I was a lad, with one of the pioneers of TV animation, Mr. Joe Barbera. For a couple of decades, Hanna-Barbera completely dominated the TV animation field. Before that, in the 40s and 50s, Bill Hanna and Joe Barbera produced over 100 Tom and Jerry cartoons. They did these for MGM, winning 7 Oscars. When MGM folded their animation department in the mid-50s, Hanna-Barbera jumped to the new medium and pioneered the limited animation form for television, cranking out Rough and Ready, and then series after series featuring a bunch of characters I grew up with, Yogi Bear, Huckleberry Hound, Quick Draw McGraw, Top Cat, Snagglepuss, and many, many others. In 1960, the Flintstones broke ground as the first primetime animated TV series. The Jetsons followed, and then the coolest cartoon action-adventure series of them all, The Adventures of Johnny Quest. The company was booming. Hanna-Barbera built a brand new studio on Ventura Boulevard and kept cranking out more shows for Saturday mornings. Megilla Gorilla was another one. That one went straight into syndication, and it was one of the ones that came about because at the request of a toy company, wasn't even anything until Ideal Toy came and said, make us a cartoon show. Other shows like that followed. Barbera, who died in 2006 at 95, gained a reputation as a terrific salesman, able to walk into boardrooms in New York armed with storyboards and mesmerize sponsors and broadcast executives. Hits such as Scooby-Doo, Where Are You? And the Smurfs followed. In 1986, by the time I visited Hanna-Barbera Studios to do this interview, the TV landscape was starting to change. The old networks, NBC, ABC, and CBS, were starting to question their Saturday morning kiddie strategies. All that animation was very expensive. This interview was recorded on an old cassette player. The tape was a Radio Shack cheapie from 37 years ago. The sound quality is nothing to yabba-dabba-doo about. Still, it's fascinating to hear Barbera, full of pep at 75, punch his way out of another corner. Sure, one network might abandon Saturday mornings, but there is talk of a new network, Fox, starting up soon and taking up the slack. And yeah, sure, several new competitors were getting into the act, but syndication was becoming a viable option. Foreign sales were rewarding, toy companies were covering many costs, and home video would soon allow Hanna-Barbera to take their new Bible series directly into homes. Let's pick up the conversation here in Barbera's corner office, where he sits in front of shelves filled with plush toys of Fred and Barney, Dino, Scooby-Doo, and even a character he created for Hockey Night in Canada, Peter Puck. I gave myself away because I'm sitting in front of Joe Barbera, and all I could do is look at the Peter Puck plush figure. He knew I was Canadian. So, anyway, how I ask at that point, will Hanna-Barbera soldier on if one of the majors, as threatened, bows out of the Saturday morning cartoon business?
Are you looking now at different times, or is it always the networks or syndication? Yeah. Or?
Well, I can understand them saying that because this is kind of a regular thing that seems to rear its head. Like NBC a few years ago was about to leave Saturday morning, okay? Because, you know, they weren't getting the ratings, I presume, and whatnot. and then we arrived with the Smurfs.
Huge.
You know, we went from an hour to 90 minutes.
Yeah.
And we're in a 50 year and made them the number one Saturday morning network for that time. So it changed their minds right away.
Yeah.
No more talk about that. Now, ABC had a rough time in ratings, and again, this dialogue comes up, mm-hmm. okay? Now, I haven't heard it from CBS. Mm-hmm. Now, with luck, when our new Flintstone Kid this fall mm-hmm. and some of the other shows that they've got, it may change their thinking, because it is a very lucrative market. What has happened is that, and it's happening all over, I mean, it's happening for nighttime motion pictures. It's right. the other areas of syndication. Mm-hmm. And for instance, with our new Bible series, we haven't gone to network or syndication, we've gone right to home video. Mm-hmm. So we have a product that we're putting into home video because the market, I think the product of the Bible story is a great adventure, as we mm-hmm. call it. And the way we're doing it, we're making an entertainment piece, we hope, plus the values, the moral values, lends itself to going straight to the home. Hmm. And I have letters that I'm getting, and, you know, something that's financed in-house, very, very expensive, and naturally went over budget because it's so new, and then we have to find new methods of selling it. But here's an arena that we're into. Mm-hmm. Number one, we like it. Mm-hmm. Number two, for survival, because say, for instance, that the network said we're not going to have Saturday morning. We now lose one network, okay? Mm-hmm. Now we look, hopefully, at people to talk about fourth network.
Right.
And we say, maybe there's something there.
Yeah.
We're examining that. Mm-hmm. Then we look at our syndication, because we started, as you know, we have a two-hour block on Sunday, mm-hmm. which is called The Fantastic World of Hanna-Barbera. And it's doing okay. Mm-hmm. And we're enlarged it this year to 4 half hours. Hmm. We're talking about 5 half hours. Now, this is something that we produce, that we put on the market, that is another area that's away from network.
Yeah.
Not deliberately, but maybe out of desperation, because you've got to open these other areas. Mm-hmm. Now, look at it this way. A network will order 13 half hours tops. Hmm. And if it doesn't work, you're gone, that's out. They may rerun it again for another year. They have the right, you don't get any income from that. So there you are. Mm-hmm. You're out of work, right? So you have to look at something else. So what has opened up the syndication? Which is not a cinch. I mean, syndication has to work or you're out a lot of money. Mm-hmm. So what has happened is toy companies have gotten into it. And working with animation houses have ordered 65 half hours at one crack instead of 13.
Right.
So, naturally, what has happened? Group after group have gotten into the act. Mm-hmm. Now there's too many of them. Mm-hmm. Well, this year, there's, I don't know, someone said there was 40 half hour syndication packages and 6 spots to put them into.
In animation?
Sure. Wow. Well, I'll tell you, you talk about animation, and ever since I got into this business, the voice of doom appeared or came out of the heavens every year. Animation is not going to last. Now it's bigger than it ever was. The whole world is into it.
What do you think is the secret of that? What has always made you such a big success and helped you ignore that voice of doom?
Well,
where others might have failed, or
well, first of all, the toy companies, and let me qualify that. First of all, when we were making cartoon shows that were successful, the toy companies would come to us and say, "Hey, we like the Flintstones, or yeah. we like Scooby Doo. Can we have a license to produce them as toys?"
Right. Right?
So there wasn't any complaints about that from the people who say that they are nothing but commercials. Yeah. We didn't hear anything like that. And also, it was desperately needed because the cost of producing these things, remember, it's still a hand art, no matter what anybody says, was going out of reach. I mean, we were in the red from day one. And the minute you started the series for Saturday morning, you were in the red. And one of the reasons being is that we have a lot of input from the networks. Mm-hmm. And the networks are not concerned, really, with our delivering on time. I mean, they're really concerned with them getting what they want and getting the material they want. And even though everyone says we must get it as fast as possible. They have to take their time, and that's their prerogative, and they do it, and we get into deficit. So when a toy company comes and says, can we use your characters in the toy market or a game market or balloons or clothing, it's like a manna from heaven, you know? Now, suddenly, for instance, a toy company says, I have a toy, and I would like to see if I could get it into animation, and we'll go into syndication with it.
Right.
So that's how you saw Master of the Universe appear, and Shaman of the Jungle, and that's how our Jetsons came back, 41 half hours of Jetsons. The network wasn't going to buy it.
It was a toy company? That...
No, it was our own idea.
Yeah.
We decided to do it because the distributing company felt that they could deliver that.
Mm-hmm.
But it was not a toy motivated show.
Yeah.
It was an entertainment motivated show. So we're not into much on merchandise on a show at all.
Well, originally there was about 26 Jetsons or
yeah.
And then you did another 40 or
yeah, the 26 Jetsons just ran on and on and on, and no one ever dreamed there was only 26
yeah,
of them.
Yeah.
It was a cult, music, it's still going.
Yeah.
And we just added to that package.
Yeah.
We've added 41 to build up to 65 or whatever the number is.
So. How long did it take to do the 41?
Oh, over a year, year and a half.
Using the computer?
Well, the computer is in it, but the computer just saves a computer. As of this moment, I'll make a statement. Computer will never take over animation.
Mm-hmm.
Computer will help you in putting color,
ink
lines, and taking out what used to be considered the drudgery in the business.
Mm-hmm.
So it was called inking and painting. Those two things also put color into background.
Mm-hmm.
It delivers a very crisp and a colorful product.
Mm-hmm.
But you can't, with computer, take a close-up of a cute character, like a little bear cub who was lost, and he had tear coming out of the bear cub's eye, and all that. Computer can't do that.
Mm-hmm.
That's still the artist who's doing that.
Mm-hmm.
And you have to go that far with it.
We'll head back into the vault with Joe Barbera in just a moment. Are you craving some new shows to stream this summer? Let's look at a couple of highlights this month on Bell Media's one-stop streaming service, Crave. Bell recently signed a deal to keep HBO Originals on Crave for years to come. Among the new and returning offerings, set phasers to stun as Captain Christopher Pike returns in an all-new season of Star Trek Strange New Worlds. Crave also has the original docuseries, Billionaire Murderers, all about the investigation into the unsolved slayings in Toronto of Canadian power couple Barry and Honey Sherman. Finally, fire up a Crantini for the season 2 launch of And Just Like That, the reboot of the HBO signature series, Sex and the City. Find out who's next when it comes to riding their Peloton to oblivion. All that and so much more, streaming exclusively in Canada this month on Crave.
Look, up at the set. It's a movie. It's a show. It's Super Channel. When calls the heart? This summer on Super Channel, that's when. Now, in its 10th season, catch up on this homegrown Canadian drama. It's heart and home time for all your favorites. And there's good news on Fuse. Can you keep some castle secrets? All will be revealed. Join us for a fascinating look into days of yore. We've lowered the drawbridge on 8 new episodes, all on Super Channel.
Yogi Bear is smarter than the average bear. Yogi Bear is always in the ranger's hair.
And we're back with more with Joe Barbera. A bit later, we got into the whole business of making a Saturday morning children's show at the request of a toy company. How, I asked, did Barbera justify this to critics who said he was just creating 30-minute infomercials?
They're underestimating the intelligence of the audience. And I'm sounding at 3 years old up.
Yeah.
Now, you show me one child who sees a show they don't like that's going to keep looking at it. See, that's not going to sell a toy.
Yeah.
If they don't like it, they're not going to look at it. You watch a child. If the show doesn't interest them, you see them begin to play with something. You see their attention drift. Mm-hmm. And they're not looking at it fascinated. And that's exactly what's going to happen. And the toy is not going to be sold based on the show if it isn't a good show. Mm-hmm. First of all, the show has to be entertaining. And it has to be deliver something that the kids like. And then you also have to break your show down to categories. You have certain age groups who like a certain kind of a show. Some like a show which have weapons in it, and some like a show that's the girls which have the dolls and the toys and the softness. Then you have to appeal to the little kids. So one show doesn't appeal to everybody.
I also asked Barbera about one of the things he was most focused on in 1986, reviving key characters from the past, both on TV and in movies, including a Sunday series titled The Fantastic World of Hanna-Barbera.
You look at today's market, right? Then suddenly we show up with a Yogi Bear, and they'll say, hey, everybody says, I was raised on that character. I love that character. Why don't you do some more of them? Or Flintstone.
Right.
As, for instance, I get stopped on a freeway, and this giant policeman gets off the side of his car with the lights flashing, and he goes through the routine. He says, your driver's license, you have your certificate there, and I'm going, what did I do? What happened? You know, and he says, well, I do all the speed limit. Let me see here. He says, Father, he says, are you a gentleman so far with doing the Flintstone? I said, yeah, up to now. I said, he says, oh, hey, he says, I couldn't give anybody a Flintstone. He says, I was raised on those things.
Great.
But why are they still going? Because the stories were so good.
Yeah.
They were warm stories.
Yeah.
And there was a lot of touches in them, you know?
Barbera learned the value of cartoon stars the hard way. After all, he and Bill Hanna lost control of the Tom and Jerry franchise when rights holders MGM started handing the cat and mouse cartoons over to others. Cartoon purists flinch whenever Gene Deitch's name, for example, appears before a Tom and Jerry cartoon. Listen to Barbera's bitterness about that right here.
It's ridiculous. I mean, here is a set of characters that are worldwide that yeah. run in some places all around the clock, like anyone they have a theater that runs them all the time.
Yeah.
Won 7 Oscars, and they have this very valuable property, and whoever it was there decided to give it to another studio because he has the faintest idea of what it takes to make a cartoon. The thing that shocked me, I'll never understand it, was how the studio had the nerve or the guts for the stupidity to take these characters and try to duplicate what was done with so much thought and polish. Yeah. That's number one. The network, now one network, the ABC gentleman, Squire Rushnell, said, hell, he says, I wouldn't do Tom and Jerry unless Joe Barbera and Bill Hanna do it. But another network didn't think like that. They gave it to a studio. And the result was total disaster, you know.
How valuable were recognizable characters? Well, in 1986, it seemed that every studio wanted to make live-action features out of Hanna-Barbera cartoons. Am I right, Joe?
Here's where we are in the Flintstone feature. First of all, you know, Paramount has a deal to try to do a Jetson feature live.
Yeah.
And they've been negotiating on a Flintstone feature live. And I'm meeting at noon time, lunchtime, to discuss it again.
Mm-hmm.
And see how we can get it going. There's a very heavyweight producer that's it's amazing. This is a fact. People come in here, I mean, the heads of studio, I mean, I meet them and they say, why can't we get the Flintstone? We want to make a Flintstone feature live, okay? Meantime, we have a way of doing well, we want to do a Flintstone feature animated,
right.
Okay? Now, the same thing happens on Jetson, okay? Now, you know, one of the biggest ones is the Johnny Quest series.
Really?
You know how many companies have come in here?
That was a great...
So my meeting also will be about June, the Johnny Quest feature.
Yeah.
Live.
As for all those movie spin-offs, The Jetson the Movie did come out in 1990. It was an animated feature, and yes, original voice artist George O'Hanlon as George Jetson, Penny Singleton as Jane his wife, and Hanna-Barbera veterans Don Messick and the great Mel Blanc all returned to voice the characters. O'Hanlon and Blanc died sadly during production, and the film is dedicated to them both. It took several more years for a live-action Flintstone feature to be made. In 1994, the Flintstones starred John Goodman as Fred, Rick Moranis as Barney, Elizabeth Perkins as Wilma, and Rosie O'Donnell as Betty. It grossed $342 million worldwide. Barbera, no spring chicken himself at 75, seemed delighted to see some of the old voice artists back when it came time to record new episodes and the feature version of The Jetsons.
I tell you, we were very lucky on The Jetsons. We got back everybody.
Oh, great.
Everybody.
Great.
Wheelchairs or whatever. You know what I mean? And you should see them come to life.
Yeah.
Oh, they were so happy. They were glowing, these people. And the same thing, like we got Dawes Butler still doing Yogi Bear. I met him out in the parking lot.
Oh, great.
And he stuck his head in the window. And he says, "How are you?" He says, "Listen, I'm hitting these lines and I'm really in there," because he built slowly back up at the energy level.
Yeah.
And enthusiastic as hell.
We'll be back with Joe Barbera in just a moment. Time once again to speak with Emily Gagné from Hollywood Suite. Emily, the summer's here and time is ripe for dancing in the streets. What do you got for us this month?
Well, it's going to be an action-packed summer, Bill, with our lineup of action films. Every single night in July and August, you can watch a different action film on Hollywood Suite. We've got everything from movies like Duel, which is Steven Spielberg's first film, to Death Wish, to Attack the Block, to Marathon Man, to Barbed Wire and John Wick. Every hero villain that you love from the action movie universe is probably on our channels this summer.
Wow. Well, there you have it. It's an action-packed summer on Hollywood Suite. Thanks, Emily.
Thanks, Bill.
Actress Zoe Saldana is putting a pause on her Star Trek career and beaming down to Earth for the much-anticipated brand-new series from Taylor Sheridan entitled Special Ops Lioness. Based on real-life events, see Toronto native Laisla de Oliveira as she joins Nicole Kidman in this exciting spy-based thriller. From the training of recruits to the on-job assignments, the women of Lioness Special Ops are the real kings of the jungle in the war on domestic terrorism. All this and much more is yours. There's a mountain of entertainment on Paramount Plus.
And we're back with Joe Barbera. Now, we're going to introduce another segment here, and you'll notice there's better sound quality. Now, it's the same crummy cassette that I was recording way back in 1986, but I've flipped the side, and so as I pushed play plus record for side B, I also must have pushed the cassette player closer to Joe Barbera. Now, had I known I was making a podcast about 37 years later, I would have pushed the cassette player closer sooner. However, at least we got some better sound now. And what you're going to hear, you'll hear some pages turning. And that's because this great cartoon producer was showing me pages of sketches and storyboards in his office for new episodes of a Johnny Quest series. Hanna-Barbera was producing some new episodes to add to the 26 original episodes of Johnny Quest to, I guess, bring it up to 65 episodes. And, you know, the sketches were incredible. Just, it was amazing to see this, storyboards. And what was really interesting, Barbera was gently suggesting that a famous producer-director behind a certain popular live-action feature of that time, and again today, still, well, this guy must have been a Johnny Quest fan way back in the early 60s.
Look at, I mean, you look at some of this stuff. We were into Raiders of the Lost Ark.
Yeah, I know.
Way
I know.
Before they were even doing
right.
it.
Right, you know? Yeah, yeah.
In fact, when I did a series for NBC called Danger Island, do you remember Danger Island, which was part of the Banana Split Show?
Oh, yeah, 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 that's right. Yeah.
I was running parts of it here for Sylvan, this was about last year, and he says, my God. He says, that's Raiders of the Lost Ark. You had the natives chasing them, you saw them running,
yeah.
them getting on the river, getting on a plane, they're throwing spears. And, if you remember Raiders, and a big rock
yeah.
rolled down, and
right.
he ran, and they chased him, yeah. and he jumped in, and they got on the plane. I don't know how he got away, but it was set up with all the same. You know
wow.
what I mean? Because, you know, you think the same. So here we are. I always get a big kick out of it. They always call Bill and I animators. For some reason, I would call animators.
Yeah.
I guess if people don't...
They should be producers?
They don't know about you. Well, we produce, we write, we
yeah.
direct, we time. But you see, here's a touch that's being injected in as kind of a robotic creature,
oh, wow.
I guess.
Yeah.
And we have to move into that kind of thinking. But it's interesting, though, isn't it?
Yeah. Was Johnny Quest... just something you dreamed up, or where did it come from?
That was created original.
Wow,
that was a real.
Because it seems to have been from you know. And now looking at this,
yeah,
it
way ahead of its time.
Yeah, yeah
way ahead of its time.
Great.
I'll tell you, I did a 3.5 minute piece of film as to sell it,
mm-hmm.
and it was based on the first story we knew called The Lizard Men.
Mm-hmm.
And what I did was I tied the story into the Sargasso Sea. Which is where all the dead ships seem to gather and
right.
rot. And I used that as a headquarters of a ring that was experimenting with a new beam.
Mm-hmm.
So I took 3.5 minutes of that, and I did it. And we went to various... in those days, you pitched to their clients. You didn't go to networks.
Mm-hmm.
But we went into clients. I tell you, that piece of film blew them right out of the theater. I had the chasing and the lizard men and the... And the fire and exploding and everything.
Yeah, it was great.
Holy moly, and that was that long ago. That was prime time.
Now, speaking of prime time, Barbera next tells the story of how he sold the Flintstones to skeptical executives at ABC, as well as equally skeptical sponsors back in New York in 1959. Now, here is where you really get a sense of Barbera, not just as a great salesman, but as a terrific storyteller.
You know, it's funny, no matter how often, Flintstone is the one that worked, was on primetime for 6 years.
Yeah.
But it seemed as if they didn't know how to handle the rest that we did. I mean, you got to promote like that.
Well, do you think that will ever happen again, that you'll see it?
Well, I got a new one right now.
Yeah?
I got the artwork right over there, and I tell you, it is a whole departure. And once again, I will have to overcome the normal terror that happens when you walk in the network and say, I have a series, you love a great idea, and yeah, and I say it's animated, and you go, oh, no, I don't think you can handle that. And I'll tell you, that's happened to me a couple of times.
Why?
Don't ask me why. Well, I think they kind of think that animation has to be Saturday morning for some reason or other.
Yeah.
Well, this concept is not Saturday morning, and it's hilarious.
Mm-hmm.
So I have to overcome that. That's what we had to do with Flintstone.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I sat in New York and took a pot shot trips out of there to St. Louis and Chicago
mm-hmm.
to try to sell Flintstone. It took
mm-hmm.
8 weeks. I was in a hotel overlooking Central Park. I saw the snow go. I saw the ice melt. I saw the geese come back on
yeah.
the pond. I saw the buds come out. I sat through a St. Patrick's Day parade, which started at 8 in the morning and stopped at midnight or something.
Yeah.
And I sat there, and I would make pitches. I had to verbally pitch the show. Yeah, no one understood. No one else could do it. I used to put up storyboard, cover four walls of storyboard. I would act out all the parts, and then I took an hour and a half.
Yeah.
And I go back to the hotel, collapse, and they call me and say, hey, can you get here? And I have another whole back to go again. The one time I did it for, I believe it was Bristol-Myers, for the whole agency, about 22 people. And then they called him and said, the president couldn't make it, but he would like to see it. So I go back for one guy.
Wow.
8 weeks before one day, Golenson, Leonard Golenson, and Tom Moore, and I think Danny Melnick walked in at 9 o'clock in the morning, bought the show in 15 minutes. And I went back to California. The minute I arrived in California, phone rang again. They said, wait a minute. The network bought it, but now they're going to go to clients. And they can't present this show.
Only you can.
Can you come back again?
Oh, no.
So now I went down to Winston-Salem.
Yeah.
I pitched to that whole bunch. And by God, they bought it. Cigarettes. Then I went to Chicago, another one. This amongst many others. And Miles Laboratory bought it. And they still are doing the vitamins.
All right, Flintstone vitamins,
Boy, people don't know what goes on out there.
Yeah.
Then came the real Lulu. We had to produce it. This is a prime-time animated show that has to be produced on a kind of a clockwork basis. And you can't just temperamentally do it when you're in the mood. And you have to get away from thinking about Tom and Jerry cartoons, 5-minute ones, to half-hour situation comedy.
Yeah.
With terrific performers in it. And you cast them and directed. I directed all of them.
Really?
I directed all the shows about the first 10 or 12, 14 years.
Mm-hmm.
And supervised all the scripts and storyboards and all that. Never slept.
That was great stuff.
Well, we're still involved.
Oh, sure.
Well, you see, that's why I think they've survived, because the stories were good.
Oh, yeah, they're very funny. They're very funny.
And there's some of the stuff that's out there now, which once they get off the air, I don't think anybody's going to be bringing them back.
No.
You know, they just don't. It's not a put down. It's just the nature of the business.
Mm-hmm.
They're just producing a lot of stuff, and it's tied around a toy, and the minute you're tied around a toy, if it's working, the toy's going to pass. As old toys will pass, and I look for new toys. So, you know, I mean, let's take a toy. I mean, I don't know whether a robot toy will be okay, will be rerun 10 or 15 years from now. I'm
right.
not sure, because I have a philosophy that if a child can't take a toy to bed, it's not going to last. Now, anything that's a robot,
Yeah.
I mean, geez, the kid's going to hit himself in the eye with a mechanical foot, huh?
Yeah.
I don't know.
What about, I guess, one other question that I wanted to ask was the charge that there's some pressure group that finds animation too violent for kids or things like that. I mean, how do you feel about that?
Well, I presume it depends on the subject matter. If you're doing G.I. Joe, that shooting and stuff. But the thing that is unbelievable is you see mothers buying the stuff. They're buying, you know, those camouflage costumes
for
the kids to wear.
Right, yeah.
The same mother that would never let that child go to war if they could possibly do it. So there it is.
I mean,
it isn't the parents are keeping it going.
But what about things like Tom and Jerry's? They seem to chop them up and stuff.
Well, Tom and Jerry in his day really had some hard, what I call clever routines, but mostly slapstick.
Yeah.
Now, look at my great idols were Laurel and Hardy and Chaplin and Harold Lloyd and Buster Keaton and clowns and circuses.
Yeah.
You look at those things. These are considered classic. These are considered giant comedian, right?
Yeah.
They wouldn't be there if they had these restrictions. Do you kick somebody in the fanny? Do you hit them with a pie? You can't do that anymore.
Yeah.
Does a clown whack somebody with one of those explosion boards, mm-hmm. you know? Do you fall like Laurel and Hardy? You remember when they had a piano going up two flights of stairs? They got run over by it. It fell on them.
Yeah. The music box.
Well, at one time they tried to sell something to a guy in our house.
Yeah.
And when he either, I don't know what, either pushed him in the face or something. So they turned around and they pulled up a planche. So he came out, he took off that fender of their car.
Yeah, that was the it was a Christmas tree salesman.
Classic.
Yeah.
Right. Then they came back and pulled up another plane. He went home and took the radiator off the car.
Right, yeah.
Now, watching all of this was a policeman with his pad. He was making notes. He never got near him.
Yeah.
Now, that you can say is violent or funny.
Yeah.
Now, people got hysterical laughing at it.
Yeah.
Plus, you know, one time I said to one of the action groups, I said, I don't know, I said, I used to go there every doggone, every Saturday I'd sit and watch a cliffhanger. And I don't know, I didn't turn myself away. They said, yeah, but look at the country today. Now, they said this 15 years ago, over 15 years ago. Look at the country today. Now, all of that stuff has been taken out of the animation business, especially in radio networks who must be very protective in the FCC.
Yeah.
We police ourselves. We've taken it out of animation. You will see more in syndication, but in Saturday morning, I haven't seen the world improving.
But do you think by taking the violence or softening it or making them too cuddly, that it has softened the audience a bit? Or
we've lost the audience. Why is it such a fallout? Let me tell you what has happened. I'm not faulting them because the network has to be careful, and we should be careful. If anyone is stupid enough to do something in animation where they crush a human being or shoot a human being, it's sheer stupidity. You don't have to do that.
Yeah.
You can be funny. You don't have to even get near that kind of material. But what is happening is that there's so much, let me use the word, supervision.
Yeah.
Practice and programs. That I know when I got interviewed by 60 Minutes, even the comment was, like, why is everything getting so homogenized?
Yeah.
See, it reduces everything to a pack level.
Right.
And it's very hard for an individual who is, let's say very clever or brilliant or funny, to put his stuff in, because the network or the people have to also put their stuff on top of that.
Yeah.
It would be as if Laurel and Hardy were going to do a gag, and they were all set to do it, and someone said, well, just a minute, I don't think you should do this. You see, I think you can do that.
Yeah.
So now they have to compromise their original material, which made them famous.
Right.
You see, now that would have happened with Chapman. It would happen with anybody today.
Mm-hmm.
In any comedy, you can get away with an emotion picture. You know, so I just don't think the stuff is as funny as it used to be. So.
Well, if you were producing it, say, just for video, then you wouldn't perhaps need to...
You would put your own stuff in. It's like right now, we're doing the Bible stories, right?
Right.
Okay. And so far, the action has been just wonderful.
Great.
Just wonderful. But I don't know whether if I was doing it with a network, whether they would allow me to drown the whole Egyptian... army was pursuing them through the Red Sea, but that's the Bible.
Right.
I don't know whether they were allowing us to have David hit him in the forehead and blood comes out. They just said, wait a minute, no, cut that out. Now, we didn't cut his head off because we ourselves police ourselves there, Goliath, but that's in the story.
Yeah.
I don't know whether they let us put them in the lion's den, Daniel, because they say maybe children were frightened by the lion.
Yeah.
But that's the story.
Yeah, with lots of violence in the Bible.
Now, in Moses, we have all the firstborn die, right? We have a snake eats all the other snakes. I don't know whether we get that stuff approved. But I was asked on some interviews, isn't that Bible too violent? I said, well, I can't hit David with a grape. You know? I said, that's the story.
Yeah.
Well, there he was in 1986, Joe Barbera, and keep in mind that this interview took place about 3 or 4 years before another animated primetime series premiered that is still cranking out new episodes in primetime today, The Simpsons. So, you know, Homer and Marge, they owe it all to Fred and Wilma. So I hope you enjoyed this special from the Vault episode. Please let me know in the comment section at Brio TV if you'd like to hear more of these interviews from back in my cassette recording TV guide days. Now, I want to thank producer Phil Hahn for his patience and ingenuity in stitching together this episode. Thanks also to the folks at Digital Treasures in Toronto for restoring the tapes to a level of playable quality. Thanks, as always, to the sponsors here at Brio TV for making this podcast possible week after week and their very valued support. Most of all, thank you for listening. If you enjoyed what you heard, please favor us with a like or a review. I'm Bill Brio. Thanks for listening.